Jay Pizzy, Mosier on the beat. Look at my team, ay. Look at the ring, whoa. See what I mean, ay. You see what I mean? Look at my team, look at the ring, everything. This is a dream, all but a dream. This ain't a dream, I am a fiend for the cream, go. DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
See, I calculate. Yeah, y'all just palpitate. Whoa, if you don't calculate, get it? Get it? Calculate. Lady Justice is illustrious. I just love this. I can put this in this function and it turns up into something. And that something came from nothing. And I sold it for a button. Now I got this lovely lump sum. Guess I'll burn these bumps like buzzing, bro.
Welcome to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast, a show dedicated to Dynasty fantasy football trades and player values, with your hosts, John Paul Hurley and Izzy Elkafoss.
This ain't a dream, I am a fiend.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast. I'm your host, John Paul Hurley, on Twitter at FF Hercules. Joining me, Izzy Elkafoss, the Pharaoh Fantasy, at DTC underscore IzzyE on Twitter. Izzy, what's going on, man?
Not much. Tuesday night football. Let's go. I kind of like it.
I know, right? TNF.
I like it.
I think I heard a... I should probably tweet this out. This would be a pretty fun one. But Josh Allen is the all-time leading passer on Tuesday night football.
Oh, yeah. Is this the first ever Tuesday night game?
Maybe not. I would have to go back into the record books, but it's got to be one of the few, at least. It could be. Something for Google, right? Has there ever been an NFL game on Tuesday? Since 1946, it has only occurred once. And like the Titans-Bills, it was not on purpose. The NFL has now claimed Thursday and Monday nights. Obviously, we know that. The last time the league played on a Tuesday night was the Philadelphia Eagles and Minnesota Vikings on December 28th, 2010. That's got to be a playoff game, right?
December? Why? What happened?
Yeah, something must have happened. Was there a strike that year or anything? Oh, a snowstorm that was projected to drop about 18 inches in Philadelphia on the weekend following Christmas 2010 forced the NFL to move the game in consideration of the Vikings' travel plans and fans for the ability to get to Lincoln Financial Field. There you have it. Now we're going to get on to fantasy football topics. We got some good ones. I think at the beginning of the show, there are some pretty obvious heavy-hitting headliners, but there isn't like a whole lot. It's not quite as deep of a week to talk about things, but it's a heavy-hitting week, right?
Yeah, kind of.
Pretty heavy hitting. There's some big headliners. Yeah. So we'll go through the Dynasty headlines first, and we'll help you with your teams and figure out exactly what you should be doing with these players, because they would probably be the biggest movers for value and maybe even like some bigger trade targets. And we'll start things off with Chase Claypool. Have you ever heard of him?
Yes, once.
Chase Claypool, yeah, speaking of once, Chase Claypool just popped off for, I think he had 3 receiving touchdowns, 1 rushing touchdown, and now everybody thinks that he's worth like 4 firsts, mm-hmm. I believe. I think I saw it in a most recent Twitter poll.
Yes.
So is this something that you believe is sustainable? What should we be doing with our Chase Claypool shares? And should we be, is he a buy? Is he a sell?
He's definitely not a buy. Good Lord.
He's a huge buy.
He's definitely not a buy. If you're buying Chase Claypool right now, it's not to say that his value won't get higher and he's legit, but you're likely the fish in your league, because if you're chasing Claypool, you're likely chasing everybody.
Sounds like an autobiography.
What's that? Chasing Claypool?
Chasing Claypool,
that's
yeah.
That's cool, actually, yeah. You're chasing everybody. So at this point, it's kind of like one of those things where if you have Claypool, great. You did a great job. You hang on to him. If you don't, you wait for his value to dip again, because you're literally buying on a spike. Now, Claypool could have a really successful career long term, but it's very hard to follow up a 4 touchdown game and meet expectations next week. If Deontay Johnson is playing, the only reason he popped off for what he did was Deontay Johnson was out. He got hurt almost immediately. So
this doesn't help Deontay Johnson at all.
No, I would be buying the piss out of Deontay Johnson. But it's Deontay with Juju and Claypool right now, and James Washington. A lot of mouths to feed. Eric Ebron, you got 5 pass catchers there. vying for targets. And up until, you know, when Deontay's been healthy, he's been by, you know, I don't want to say by far, but he's the obvious preferred target of Ben Roethlisberger. And I think Claypool is going to be one of those guys like Martavis, where he's not going to be targeted often, but his targets are going to be of high potential. So
very high touchdown percentages. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, yeah. Tough to replicate, going to be high efficiency plays. I mean, low efficiency, but high fantasy points efficiency based on points per target type of thing. I would be very comfortable just either A, selling on a spike and buying on a dip in other leagues, or B, just hanging on to them. So if I'm in a multiple leagues, I really like the idea of selling a Claypool share. If you have multiple, and if you only have one, I don't hate the idea of selling now and buying on a dip at some point in time in the season in one of your other leagues. Big fan of that, if you can pull it off. It's not always the easiest. It's easier said than done, but it's a good way to gain cross equity between your teams.
So like acquire Deontay Johnson in a first for your Claypool?
Oh man, if you can get that done, yeah.
And then wait for Deontay to blow off and then trade it back and get another first?
Yes, that'd be nice. Jets released Le'Veon Bell.
They released him, so they're unable to trade him, so they released him. Wow. Yeah,
breaking news. Izzy Schefter.
We need some breaking news sound bites from our producer, Mosier. The New York Jets released Le'Veon Bell, hot off the wire. Do you want to shift topics, or do you want to keep going with your Chase Claypool?
Let's go Claypool, because I want to ask you similar. What are you doing with Chase?
I don't have any Chase in any of my leagues, unfortunately.
Okay.
I'm kind of bummed, too, because I thought what Chase Claypool did in week 5 was going to be what T. Higgins would do one of these weeks. Not in week 5, because I think Bengals had a tough matchup, but I feel like T. Higgins is the next one that's going to really blow up. He's getting heavy targets, but as far as your question around Chase Claypool, man, he's unattainable right now. I think people who own him want too much, and if I own him, I'm actually going to hold on to him just to kind of like ride the storm and see what happens. Because
here's the issue, though: if all the pass catchers are healthy, he's not seeing enough snap share to piggyback on this result from this past week. Yeah, now, if this happened with Deontay Johnson playing a full game, I would be more apt to agree with you, and I think that he'd even be a buy. But the fact that the variable of Deontay being out, if as long as Deontay's still healthy to play and he's not out for the season, which he's not, that those two different things. And they matter.
I think the Steelers are forced to involve Claypool in their game plan going forward. And I think that Deontay Johnson's going to lose. I know this is probably like a very emotional take based on what we saw, but watching him play, I actually got to watch most of the game because I watched a red zone channel, and it's like the Steelers were on for like 50% of the red zone channel. It's hilarious. They're always in the red zone and always had big plays. But Chase Claypool has already done what Deontay Johnson has never done.
Yeah, he's done, and he's also done what a lot of players in the NFL have never done. But that doesn't mean that
exactly.
He's in
exactly. Yeah. So
Jonas Gray had 5 touchdowns, bro.
And he didn't. He had 4.
Jonas Gray had 4 touchdowns, and where is he?
He's hanging out with Al Bundy.
Exactly. So I mean, I'm not saying he's Jonas Gray, but players. And I get it. It's very unlikely that a player. I think Sammy Watkins might have had 4, not too long ago. Maybe it was just 3. I think it might have been 3, but
yeah. But we know Sammy's good. He's obviously
yeah, but
very
he's not what Sammy was supposed to be. He's become kind of we kind of view him as a journeyman guy that you hate having to plug into your rosters type of player. But
I mean, honestly, my answer is hold him. I want to see how involved he becomes in the offense. I could see it's probably the smart move to sell on a spike, but I want to hold and see if this isn't sustainable, you know, and see if he's carved out some work in that offense, because you know how I've always liked Ben Roethlisberger, and that passing offense is high octane. And even if Deontay Johnson comes back fully healthy, I still think that Chase Claypool has done enough just this week alone this season to carve himself out some work. So I think his floor is not something I'm too scared of.
Yeah. So guys to have 4 touchdowns in a game in the last, let's call it last decade.
So since Joe Webb. Okay.
Yes. Since Joe Webb. Marvin Jones.
Wow.
Eric Decker.
Yep, with Peyton Manning, right?
Yep. Marvin Jones again.
Wow, look at Marvin.
He did it once with the Lions, once with the Bengals. That's a great, that was a great trivia question right there.
Yeah, that you should put it on Twitter.
So in the last decade, there's been 4 touchdown games. 2 of them belong to Marvin Jones, and 1 of them belongs to Eric Decker.
That's crazy. That's an awesome trivia question to put on Twitter.
Yeah. So, I mean, Marvin Jones is a solid player, but he's not a Hall of Fame. He's not like it's one of those things where it's a complete anomaly, and it just so happens that he was fortunate enough to get 4 touchdowns in a game. But I don't think that this is one of those things that says, okay, this makes him legitimate. Now, let's say those 4 plays, he pulled a Calvin Johnson and was tackled at the 1. That's how you should look at it. Let's say he was tackled at the 1 on all 4 of those plays. Now you look at what he did and what's his value, right? Because touchdowns, we know, is a variable that fluctuates so often, and it's not something that you should be considering on a year-to-year basis from players. I think the targets, the yards, those are the things that you should be focused on as a dynasty owner and a fantasy owner in general, is not the touchdowns, but the amount of targets, the amount of receptions, and the amount of yards somebody's racking up.
And I'm kind of mixing it all in. I don't think you can completely disregard touchdowns, but...
It's not... I mean, we know when players have big touchdown seasons that we, like, for instance, as soon as Aaron Jones had 17 touchdowns, but did he have 17 or do you have more than that?
He had 20. He was in the 20s.
Oh, because of receiving. As soon as he had 20 or 21 or whatever, everybody's screaming regression, right? They're not necessarily screaming his yards regression. They're screaming regression just for his touchdowns.
And how is that working out for everyone?
Is Aaron Jones going to hit 21?
He's at 4 on the ground.
I think he's got a couple in the air.
4 on the ground, and he's got 2 in the air. So he's got 6 touchdowns already.
Yep. So, and he's on pace, but you got to assume that a player that puts up 21 touchdowns isn't going to do it again. The odds are unlikely that somebody's going to do it again. So when you look at, but with yardage, it's more likely to be duplicated that a guy like Aaron Jones puts up the yardage. A guy like Chase Claypool has another 110-yard game. But it's very unlikely that he's going to put up 4 touchdowns in a game. Whether Aaron Jones does it or not, the one thing that we point to all the time when high touchdown numbers happen is regression, which is the right thing to do because odds are a player won't. Like Aaron Jones had 9 touchdowns the season before, and he added 10 on top of that. He more than doubled. So you got to assume he's going to regress. If he doesn't, that's fine, but odds are that he will. Now, with Claypool, you just got to try to exclude the touchdowns because they're a random variable that can happen. I mean, these touchdowns can go to anybody at any time. But the 110 yards is what you should be focused on.
And that's fine. And you watched. So I think statistically he had a great game. And if you want to like exclude the touchdowns because you think they're a variable, but he, like, if you watched the game, like his catch, he was an exciting player. You know, he made great catches.
Yeah.
He had a lot of wiggle, a lot of burst. Like it was a very exciting player to watch.
Absolutely.
I think he puts himself in a position to really be a high ceiling threat, you know?
Yeah. I think that he's going to be what they wanted James Washington to be and what Martavis, a more versatile version of Martavis. Because Martavis wasn't a guy that you'd give the ball too much on end arounds, and he didn't have as much agility. It doesn't seem like it seems like Chase Claypool, from the small sample size that we have, has a lot more wiggle to himself when the ball's in his hands in Martavis.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be utilized in a similar capacity. And I think he eats into James Washington's role, not Deontay's, not Juju's. That's just my take on it.
Actually, maybe even James Conner. I see Conner in the passing game losing a little bit of love, you know?
Yeah. Would you buy Claypool if you had to give up a late first?
Yeah.
You would give up a late first for him.
Yep. I would.
Where's your cutoff?
I would have a really hard time giving a mid first.
Okay.
So just to average it out, maybe like 107. So I'd give a 108 and later.
Yeah. And see, I'm the type that's going to gamble on situations like this. You know, like we talked about Robert Tonyan last week, and I'm like, yeah, let's buy Tonyan for, you know, a second in tight end premium, because you're not giving up that first. You still have that. To me, as assets that you have on your team, first round picks should not be moved lightly. Like they should be reserved for things that you are highly confident in that are going to give you a better ROI than they will come draft time in May.
All right. So brass tacks, what's your line?
I'll give up a second for Chase Claypool. I'm still not giving up Chase Claypool right now, because I feel like I look at it and say, will a late first get me more than Chase Claypool when the NFL draft comes around and we're looking at this stacked class once again? Am I going to get more than Chase Claypool? And the answer is yes, assuming that Deontay Johnson and Juju stay healthy. I can't assume that players are going to get hurt and then that's what my value. I mean, Chase Claypool could get hurt, but I can't assume that I'm going to injure somebody on the Pittsburgh Steelers just to make Claypool worth more than what that rookie pick is going to be come May. And right now, I'm not trading a first-round pick unless I can say with the utmost confidence that this player has such a good value insulation that he's going to be worth more than that late first that I'm trading.
I'm going to prove you wrong.
Okay.
So if you did, and I'm sure that every single podcast, every single analyst, every single writer, everybody is talking about Chase Claypool right now, and some people are probably blowing it out of proportion a little bit. So let's be realistic, and I'll just hear it from your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you draft Chase Claypool if we redid the rookie draft, the 2020 rookie draft today? So obviously, let's just do receivers, because I think that's pretty easy. So let's start from 101. Screw it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I know you got Clyde number one. Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah. Are we talking Superflex? We should talk Superflex, because that's...
Let's talk Superflex. So we'll mix Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert. I mean, Herbert might even... The funny thing is this could be like a segue into our next player, but... Herbert probably has made enough of a case where people would consider taking him out of Burrow. I mean,
okay.
I'm in that.
So let's go through this. Let's just go through the quarterbacks.
Herbert, Burrow. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd rather have all three quarterbacks, even Tua.
Yeah. Tua. That's fine. So that's five, right? Yep. Swift. Dobbins, Akers.
I'd still rather have the five running backs. So that's eight. I'd rather have CD. That's nine. I'd rather have Jefferson. That's 10. I'd rather have Ruggs. That's 11.
Judy.
I'd rather have Judy. That's 12. Who were we missing?
Rager.
I've never been a big Rager guy. So, I mean, I'm okay with somebody saying I'd rather have Claypool, and I would rather have Claypool than Rager. But I understand that Rager would likely have more value than Claypool by the end of the season.
So you think that currently Ruggs is worth more than Claypool?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is to me, and I think the average Joe.
What you think the ADP would be right now?
The ADP would here's the thing: the average Joe is, as we know, is quick to jump on players week to week, which is why if Claypool has another 1 for 24 or 2 for 60. He's going to loot, and Judy goes for 5 for 60 and a touchdown. Judy's going to be more valuable. And everybody's going to want Judy. Like, not everybody, but people are going to want Judy over Claypool. But
into that point, we got James Robinson probably sneaking his way into the first.
I mean, and that's where it comes down to me, where I have James Robinson or Claypool. And if I'm rebuilding my team, I want to have Claypool. But if I'm a contender or I'm trying to make the playoffs and see what I can do, I'd rather have James Robinson. Yeah. It's close enough to me where it depends on the team. And that's where the line is drawn. I'm okay with that. So, which is why I'm okay paying a high second for Claypool, but I'm not okay paying a 2021 first. Okay. Any 21. Not yet.
And I'll go late. And I use the 2020 players, which was, in my opinion, a very loaded draft. I'd have a hard time taking Ruggs ahead of Claypool now at this point. But I think Ruggs will be fine. Yeah. That'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. But, I mean, who did I have? Who did you? Because you said you were going to prove me wrong. So which of those players would you?
I didn't think you'd go Ruggs ahead of Claypool.
So he's 112 for you?
Maybe not for me, but like I think that that's what the ADP would be. And I think that at this point, Claypool would go ahead of Akers, even though I would rather have Akers because I think he's a good hold right now. But I think that Claypool could be worth more than Akers now.
Good question. So let me, I think you're probably right because Twitter's just mind numbing, but I will post it. So go through, do you have the calculator pulled up?
So, I should just go to the ranking. So did you know that the dynamic rankings page now displays each player's individual value from the calculator? So you can actually download spreadsheets and have fun with the data. Just play with it, you know, just play with it.
Quarter chub, baby. I love it.
Quarter chub. All right. So I'm gonna go to the rankings page. And you want to know, like, just players in general that are around him right now?
Yes.
Superflex, around Claypool?
Yes.
So, like, Hunter Henry. So, Claypool right now is valued as a 13.1. I don't know if the calculator went through its weekly updates yet, has it?
Yes.
Okay, so Claypool valued at 13.1. Hunter Henry, 13.3. Ruggs, 13.5. So, that's actually
pretty close.
Pretty compelling considering Ruggs is basically within, you know, fractions.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Smith, Hawkinson.
Well, who's below him?
Jarvis Landry at 13.1, tied with him. Evan Engram, N'Keal Harry. And I think that's actually N'Keal Harry being basically tied with Claypool is not right. But
you think
Robbie Anderson?
Who would you rather? You said you don't think that's right. So who below Chase Claypool would you obviously rather have Claypool ahead of? So you said Robbie Anderson, like you'd rather have Claypool than Robbie?
Yeah, and I get there's a lot of people that, like, Robbie's had it having a phenomenal season. I think he's like a top six or seven wide receiver, but I just at age 27 in a offense led by Teddy Bridgewater, who is really conservative, coming off a very big week, and like a loaded wide receiver core with a injured Christian McCaffrey, I don't believe in it, but that's my thoughts.
LaVisca or Claypool?
Man, I really like LaVisca too, but I think Claypool's sexy ceiling gives the nudge to Claypool.
This is what I'm talking about. We got to remove the touchdowns. The ceiling
hasn't done that.
The ceiling should not include the touchdowns because we know that I just named you the only players to have four touchdowns in a game, and that's Marvin Jones and Eric Decker, and those guys do not scream ceiling to you.
I just can't. So I've got 2 points. Number one, I can't just completely dismiss touchdowns. I'm sorry. I can like tone it down a little bit. That's my first point. My second point is LaVisca Chenault has not come close to the 100 and what?
That's fine. Ignore that for a second. But you can't include that in ceiling. You can't include a four touchdown game into ceiling. Because
and that's fine. That's why that, my second that would point mean comes that, in. That Chenault's got 191 receiving yards total this season.
Okay, so can we remove the touchdowns?
My second point removed the touchdowns.
Okay.
And like I said, I don't like to do that. I think that's it's foolish.
Well, it is. It isn't because that would be saying that Marvin Jones's ceiling is higher than Tyreek Hill's and Devonta Adams and Michael Thomas's and DK Metcalf's and CD Lamb's and all these top receivers.
Because he did it 10 years ago.
He did it twice.
Yeah.
So if he's doing it twice, and technically that is his ceiling because he's hit it twice. But it's not.
But Marvin Jones probably was. Like, people were having this conversation about Marvin Jones games, you know, during the season that he did
exactly.
That. Like, oh my gosh.
Exactly. But he's not. That's why the touchdowns you shouldn't count that in the ceiling because
Yeah, you can't, nobody you can't guarantee that for every player. It's only happened three times, like you said. So you can't guarantee the same.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you a question. Does Marvin Jones have the highest ceiling of any wide receiver in the last 10 years?
No.
Okay. Then your point is irrelevant to the ceiling. So take the touchdowns out.
No, because like I said, you can't guarantee the same outcome for Chase Claypool that Marvin Jones had because it's unknown right now.
It doesn't matter. The whole point is Marvin Jones did it twice with four touchdowns, and you were including touchdowns into Chase Claypool's ceiling when we know that we shouldn't be including touchdowns into ceilings. Because so, touchdowns are a random variable. They can, as we've seen with Marvin Jones and we've seen with Eric Decker, a four touchdown game can come from anybody that's getting significant run. Regardless.
Yeah.
Do you think that his value based on all the players around him is about right in the calculator?
I would say it's about right. There are many ahead of him that I would rather have him ahead of.
Like who? So like between, I can probably say I'd rather have Jonnu and Hockenson over him.
How about Hunter Henry or Chase Claypool?
It's close. I mean, Hunter Henry is one of those, it comes down to.
And that's fine. You can say close.
It's close because
I got many more.
Tight ends are, there's not a lot of them out there producing, so it's hard to find one where with Chase Claypool is going to be a lot of variables every week.
Michael Gallup or Claypool? And I'm fine with this.
Gallup.
I know that.
Yeah, it's not even
this
close.
This is the one that really stands out. David Johnson.
To me, it's silly. It's super team obvious. Dependent.
Yeah, I don't even think it is. I don't think David Johnson's producing enough as a running back to even be in the same conversation dynasty wise.
He's getting volume. He's getting weekly volume.
I just disagree. Devontae Parker, I get that. I'd rather have Claypool probably. I mean, there's a 5-year age gap.
I mean, this is, I don't know, man. This is what I don't like. I don't like that one big game popping out of nowhere is now making this player worth guys that have either sustained production or have high volume.
Yeah, he's flashing what he's capable of. And he, like I said, he looked good doing it. It didn't look like those were fluky plays. Like he was an exciting player. Like he made great catches and made great plays.
That's fine. So. I mean, yeah. I mean, like I said, I have no issue with somebody holding. I just don't like the idea of buying for first right now. I just don't.
We're just on a little bit different pages. And I think if you had Claypool on your team, we might make pretty good trade partners.
Oh, absolutely. If you'd offer me a late first, I would take it.
Yeah.
I would take it. I'd cash in the profit and I'd basically reserve that equity. Because here's the thing. You're not plugging in Claypool confidently every week. But so if he's going to be a future prospect, I would rather have the one in the hand right now because Claypool's value could change. I mean, it could go up, it could go down, but he's the two in the bush, even though we've seen it and we haven't seen it with. Now, here's the interesting dynamic with this. You would assume that the draft pick is the two in the bush, but the draft pick right now with an unknown player in it is actually safer than Claypool because you can trade that pick for any player that is in that value range and you hand select it. That's the one in the hand. He is the two in the bush because you only have one option with Chase Claypool where you have many options with a first round pick. So Chase Claypool is your two in the bush because he could go up and he can go down, but you're taking that risk.
So 110 is the Vegas line, the rookie pick 2021 110.
Oh, yeah. 2021. Yeah, I'm taking.
So I'm going to say that before the end of the season, Claypool will be worth well more than the 110 at some point.
Sure. And you know what? If he has these random outbursts of games, he can be CPAT number two, where Cordarrelle Patterson climbed up into the top 15 in ADP off of just high big play type performances and he fizzled.
Yeah, but like you had an opportunity to move him at a peak though.
Yeah, sure.
Claypool is not peaking right now. Like if you think that he's worth a second.
Yeah, he's definitely not peaking.
But so what I'm saying, I'm thinking we're approaching a bet here. So like, do you want to make a bet about Claypool versus the 110?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
And so what do you want the terms of the bet to be? By the way, this is our new segment, Weekly Bets with Buddies, right? Mm-hmm. This is the Bets with Buddies segment.
Yeah. I listen.
So each week, I think we should try to find a way to hammer out like one fun gentleman's bet. And by the way, really quickly, just to recap, last week, Izzy and I had a fun one. I thought that Dak Prescott would maintain a 340 yard yeah. per game pace.
Yeah.
And end up having more than 5,440 yards, which would be the NFL record for passing yards in a season?
Yeah, 5440 was the record.
I felt that he would maintain that pace. Oh, and no. He took the bet.
Sorry, 5467 was the record. 5440 was the bet.
5440 was our line. Yep. Yeah, that's right. So I thought that Dak Prescott would exceed that amount, and he's not going to do it. So
yeah.
That one's canceled. This week is a Chase Claypool bet. I like this. I think that Chase Claypool will be worth more than the 110 at some point this season pretty easily.
Well, now we're doing 110 this season?
Well, what do you want the terms of the bet to be?
Yeah, during by draft time. So come May.
By draft time. Okay, yeah, that's
come
fine.
May, is Chase Claypool, could you get Chase Claypool for the 110 and vice versa?
By draft time. I like that. It's fun. That'll be one that we'll revisit during the draft time.
I don't think, I think Chase Claypool is a great prospect to, and I say, and I mean prospect long term. Like, I still think that he's going to be a good player. And I still think that there is potential for him to be a legitimate player. But I'm not paying to assume that that's the case. I think it doesn't mean that I know it.
Yeah, that's fine. I understand that.
Yeah.
I get it. I just think that much like Robert Tonyan last week, paying a late first is a good investment, because I believe that he's going to go up.
You can't do that. People out there, you cannot do this. Every time somebody pops, you can't give up first round equity for it.
Yeah.
You just can't do it. If you get in the habit of doing that every time, it's a losing proposition long term. So this, probably, we talk about process. We talk about process. Your process should be that you don't give up first round picks for players that randomly pop. Now, that doesn't mean that Chase Claypool, for a first, if you make that deal, you're not winning that deal long term, and you're making a mistake by not making that deal. But it's similar to poker. I always bring it back to poker. Just because you can't chase a gut shot, right? This is potentially a gut shot or an open ender. The odds are not in your favor historically, so play the odds.
Yeah,
and you'll lose some, and it'll hurt, but you'll win a lot more.
Yeah, that's true. Do you want to hit on a hard 12 or not? Yeah.
That type. Yeah. There's a lot of different analogies for it, but yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So really quickly, I wanted to revisit all of our bets this season. So that we covered the Dak one, and we have two others going. One was Damien Harris. So as soon as he becomes healthy again, you believe that he will average 15 or more carries per game until Sony Michel returns.
Yes.
How do you feel about that still?
Yeah, I mean, they canceled the game, so we had no idea.
I realize. I mean, we're just revisiting.
I feel great about it.
Yeah. And then I want to see how you feel about this one. Izzy, you believed that Stephon Diggs.
I already told you last week that I was paying you.
I just want to cover it every week. Come on, let me have this.
No, you're fine. I mean, I already told you.
Do you know why I want to cover it again, though?
I'm amazed at Josh Allen's growth as a passer. And yeah, I think awesome. That's the thing that is a couple things. His completion percentage has jumped 13 points, which is absolutely insane. And it's not like he was at 40% or 45%. He was at 58%.
Yeah, who cares about completions when we're talking targets, though, right?
No. I'm talking about just the fact that that's one of it. And number two is the amount of times the Bills are dropping back and not running the ball. They have basically... I thought that the Ravens and Bills would easily be the top two teams to carry the ball this year, along with the Titans. And it's not even close. Like, the Bills are, I figured, good defense, a quarterback that's good on the move. He's not very accurate. And you drafted a running back. This is going to be a ground and pound, play defense, field position, and it's completely flipped on its head.
Yeah. So blah blah blah. The reason I wanted to bring it up was basically counterpoint your points that you made.
Mm-hmm.
My point was they paid a first for Stephon Diggs, right?
Yeah. So Brandon Cooks was they paid a first for Brandon Cooks when he went to LA.
They kind of forced him the ball, like in those situations.
Not really. He underwhelmed in both places.
I don't think LA paid a first. New England did.
Sammy Watkins went for a first, underwhelmed. It's just not. Once again, to me, it's odds. I play the odds because at the end of the day, that's what gives you the best chance long term. I always try to think of everything in odds.
And by the way, did you see today what he's got going on? 10 minutes left in the fourth. Buffalo's got the ball. Diggs has 16 targets.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely...
16.
Dude, he went from that offense last year to this offense is completely different. It's night and day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, and credit to McDermott. I mean, it's incredible.
I'm looking at Brandon Cook's stats. So Patriots paid a first, and they peppered him with 114 targets. The Rams paid a first. They peppered him with 117 targets.
But they're both... That's the thing. They're both pass-heavy offenses. The Bills last season...
So what's your point?
The Bills last season are not pass-heavy, and that's not peppering. It's relative to... So when I was talking about 96 targets, that's relative to the amount of target share that Brandon Cooks probably got in New Orleans and New England and in LA. Like, it's New England and LA passed the ball more than the Bills did last year. So it's a target share percentage, which I'm fine with. And that's what I was saying, is target share percentage based on what they passed last year was going to be in line with what a Brandon Cooks or LA ran. This is a completely different offense. This offense is going to pass for way more than they did last year.
And that's fine. So Brandon Cooks specifically, excluding Stephon Diggs right now.
Yep.
You'd say that 117 targets relative to the passing offense isn't a lot. So they paid a first to not give him a lot of targets.
No, I'm saying it's not like we're going to force feed you the ball. They are force feeding Stephon Diggs the ball.
What for me, a new receiver on a new team, 117 targets is a lot of targets. I'm sorry. Regardless of whether it's the Rams or the Bills.
It's the Rams in New England, which pass significantly more. But that's, once again, 96 targets is a lot for a Bills offense from based on last year. I mean, Josh Allen threw 461 passes last year. Do you know what he is through four games? He's already at 150. He's on pace for 600.
That's 100 Prescott numbers.
That's 140 extra targets to go around. If I would have known that, the 96 is a ridiculously low number. I mean, 600 pass attempts for Josh Allen. Nobody saw that coming.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
So, I mean, once again, I'm playing the odds. I was like, okay, they're going to be right around 460, 500 pass attempts. And him having roughly 20% market share would have put him right around 95 to 100. And I was good making that bet.
Yeah, but like, I was too.
You know, and a 20% market share is a really solid market share.
And you base a lot of things off of historical data. And I understand that that's what you have to do.
What a f***ing idiot that guy is.
What an idiot. Yeah, because like, let's completely disregard the fact that maybe some progression in the offense. There's changes.
How am I supposed to assume a 13% progression from Josh Allen? They're going to uncork the football. How can I assume?
You expect Josh Allen to not change at all from season to season.
You can't assume a 25% increase in pass attempts. It's more than that. It's 30% increase in pass attempts.
I'm going to look at his pass attempts in the last 3 years.
It's like 28%.
Let's look at the full picture.
How 461 to on pace for 600. Off the top of my head, it's right around 28% increase in pass attempts.
So Josh Allen, how many did Josh Allen? Yeah, he played only 12 games. Did he play all the games in 2018 or no?
Yeah, 2019 he played 60. He started all games. No, in 2018 he did not.
2018 he did not.
2018 he played 12.
So we'd have to go per game then. He averaged 29 pass attempts per game in 2018.
In 2019 he averaged 28.75. And now he's averaging like 380 or 38. So his pass attempts are up 10 per game. If you would have told me that his pass attempts are going to go up 10 per game, I'm in. Yeah. Yeah, buy the hell out of Stephon Diggs. 8.25 pass attempts per game. If you would have told me that, I'm in.
Yeah, I mean that's a lot. It's plenty. And it's through four games, so I mean you're
it could kind of
extrapolating the entire season based on four games.
But yeah, but that's what we're seeing right now. Yes, it could come down, but what's done is done through these four games. But regardless.
And by the way, so he's got 41 this game, so I guess he's well above even his season average right now.
Yeah,
so.
it's still 6.5 to go in the game. Yeah, he could very well hit 50 in this game.
But yeah, I think we kind of got a little bit off topic. So we were talking about our bets and kind of like playing the odds. The whole conversation was based around Chase Claypool, and I think I think that's a wrap, right? That's a wrap on that.
Yeah, I'm good with that. And listen, like, I'm always the guy that downplays everything because it's, to me, once again, I play it very odds based, but that's where all my success is. Like, you've been in a lot of my leagues. I've been successful in my leagues because I play the odds. And that's just how I do it. That's where I find the success. And I'm going to continue to do that.
Yeah, that's true. You play the odds. I think it's, I'm taking some more factors. You seem like you're a very data-based person, even though I know you're more of a film person.
Well, here's the thing. I like using both. I like watching players and then using data to support. And this is how it should be done. You can't, it's like love and marriage. You can't have one without the other. Hell, Bundy, you know, like you can't have one without the other. I think people that are so heavy on data and refuse to acknowledge film are doing it wrong. And on the same side, on the other side, they're doing it wrong.
That's true. Yeah. We always use data to go back and look at film closer, or use film to go back and look at data closer. Yeah.
And it boggles my mind that that's the foreign concept. Like, that's the concept that is the rarest of them all. You're either one or the other. Very rarely do people use both. And it just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. But I think that kind of, that wraps up the, man, this was the Chase Claypool pod of 2020. I'm so impressed with, we filled out an entire pod about Chase Claypool.
Yeah.
I don't know if I feel good about that or not, accomplished, or if it was, I guess we'll let the listeners decide. That was we roped in a lot of players, so I guess it was good, but I just think my final point is that I have more faith in that Steelers offense than you do, I think. So I think that there's work to be had there regardless of what happens with Deontay Johnson or if Chase steps up and carves out more work. So that's my only point.
Yeah, fair
enough. The it's unlikely that such a high touchdown performance will happen again this season or anytime in the near future, but I just feel like I know what his ceiling is now. I know what he's capable of after watching the film. The catches, the moves, the involvement, the work that he got. So I know what he's capable of. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, listen, I'm in. I like Chase Claypool, but I'm not chasing Claypool.
Yeah, I agree. And I am for a late first. But the funny thing is Claypool owners that have him won't trade him for a late first. No.
I mean, not right now. They might, but they definitely won't give up an early second. It has to be a first. If you're going to have a chance at... No. I would give up a second. I'm not going to take a second.
You would take a first for Claypool, yes, right now.
I would.
Any first, yeah.
I would. Yes.
And I think you're breathing rarefied air with that take, but
yeah, you said that last year about the Damian Harris thing. Last week about the Damian Harris
in a second. Oh yeah. But, yeah, there you go.
But once again. Anyways. What's next? I do want to quickly cover Herbert and Joe Burrow.
Yeah, we briefly mentioned them in the rookie start, basically the rookie ADP if we redid the rookie draft. So you still kind of have them neck and neck in rookie drafts. Like, which one do you think edges them out? Like, would you rather have Herbert on your team at this point
than Burrow?
Yeah.
For the cost to acquire?
No, I'm talking like rookie startup draft.
Oh, Burrow.
Rookie draft. Like, which one would you take first?
Burrow.
Okay. So you're man, do you think that situation in Cincinnati is going to change at some point in the next like year or two, or it's going to pay off? But I just think that Herbert's going to surpass Burrow at some point in the very near future because of that. It's kind of like, do you remember, was it 2016? I think there was like, was it Breshad Perriman in 2016 or 2017?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't. What are you referencing?
Which year was he a rookie? I thought it was 2017.
No, it was the year with 16. It was the Kevin White year. So 2015, right?
2015. You loved Perriman because you believed that he had breakout potential, like early on. And you wanted to draft him earlier in drafts because you thought you could watch him break out after a couple games really quick and then flip him right away.
Yep.
So you were taking him ahead of some other guys that probably had better.
You know, his situation was there for targets.
Yeah. So like you, like he had, so I feel the same way about Herbert right now. I'm trying to, I know that's kind of a reach, but I feel like Herbert in the near future will have a lot higher value potential than Burrow. And I think you'll be able to get Burrow plus at some point mid-season towards the end of the season.
No. God, no.
Okay. That's just what I feel. Hey, that's my opinion, bro.
No, I mean, I look at this and I think Herbert is going to be a good football player, but I know Joe Burrow will be. So quarterbacks in their rookie season, they can regress. I mean, we've seen player. I mean, Baker Mayfield's a classic example of that, where
Dak,
he's regressed.
Dak had a sophomore slump. He bounced back.
Yeah, bounced back. But you know, but like, I'm just saying, like with Burrow, you watch Burrow, and there's just something different about Burrow. You can tell Herbert is extremely gifted physically.
Yeah, he's got a cannon.
He moves well. But when I'm talking about watching the two players, Burrow to me is the far more neck.
Cerebral.
Yeah, neck, head up or neck up. Like Burrow has that. There's something different about Burrow.
I agree with that.
So like I'm more comfortable with Burrow, even though if Herbert is as legit as he looks, he will have a higher ceiling than Joe Burrow because he's in a better situation. Like I don't want to face the Steelers and Ravens four times a season with my starting quarterback.
Somebody tweeted out that those teams are Burrow's 25% of Burrow's remaining schedule this year.
And that matters. And that's a really good tweet, whoever that was. I mean, that's heads up. Whereas you're looking at who Herbert has, like it's a pretty open division with a lot of I don't want to say soft defenses, but it's a little bit more open where you're going to be in shootouts.
Yeah, definitely.
So
that's why I think that at some point mid to late season, Herbert will be worth more than Burrow. And maybe Burrow is the right long-term answer, but I still think that players would be willing to give up. They might even be willing to do it right now.
Okay. So here's a question. The potential for that to be a better... So you and I both agree that Joe Burrow is not only high ceiling, but he's also ridiculously high floor.
Yeah, I like Burrow.
We agree with that, right?
Well, even though this week his floor was brutal, but yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but I'm saying long-term.
Career.
Yeah, career-wise, high ceiling, high floor. Now, is Justin Herbert's ceiling that much higher than Joe Burrow to make it worth having Herbert above Burrow and taking on that additional floor?
Career-wise, no. But in the near future, yes. Career-wise, no. Definitely not.
So, I mean, I don't know.
And actually, you know what? Now that I hear myself saying that out loud, I don't know. I can't say emphatically with conviction that Justin Herbert is worse than Joe Burrow. Like, based on, like, watching his four games, I know we can take in regression and stuff, negative regression, but, man, I don't know. Like, I haven't seen this side of him. So, if he can maintain this... I'd have a really hard time answering that question. So
yeah, I mean, now I think the biggest test for players is how they, for quarterbacks especially, is how they respond in year two. And for me, I have no worries about Joe Burrow like I did with Baker Mayfield, but I do have those concerns with Herbert. Is he going to be able to process everything from the neck up as well as Joe Burrow has done, and as well as a lot of the elite quarterbacks? Like, is he winning based on the pure talent, or is he winning based on upstairs? And I think it's right now it's based on the pure talent. So, and we have to also remember too, like, Justin Herbert was going to be the first overall pick in 2019, so this shouldn't be too big
a Giants, right?
Yeah, this shouldn't be too big a surprise. Like, he was he's going to be the first overall pick. He's got a lot of talent. He still might be a little bit of a project, but he's got a lot of talent. Where Burrow isn't as talented via the arm, but he's just so safe. You know, and I like that. You know, when we're talking about those high-end assets, give me the safe with high ceiling. And I will give up the small amount of ceiling difference and take out the risk. Like, I ain't going to get greedy with it.
That's fine.
And
by the way, I got an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, each week at the end of the podcast, we've been talking about like the Clyde Edwards-Hilaire versus Jonathan Taylor and the Twitter poll and the results.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert poll every week. Just I kind of want to see
Fair.
Where we're at, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So about 2 minutes ago, I tweeted one out. It's already got 43 votes. I'm going to cover the results after you cover your Jonathan Taylor, Clyde Edwards-Helaire votes. But I think it might be interesting to maybe have a quarterback spin on that. And we'll just cover each of them at the end of every podcast. So
okay, I did a poll today for something on the show. It's been so long. Oh, Akers 62% over Claypool.
Okay,
90 votes, which I think is about right.
Yeah. So yeah, let's wrap things up with our polls. So, what did you have for?
So as we've gone over, we did a series of polls every week. We've done a Clyde Taylor poll, and in the off season and week one, Clyde was the preferred player. Week two was Taylor, 67%. Week three was Taylor, 59%. Week four shifted to Clyde, 57%. And then week five, it's back to Taylor at 53%.
Yeah, Taylor had that touchdown, right?
Because Taylor had a touchdown and Clyde didn't, probably. Once again, the touchdown variable shifts value, and it shouldn't. Clyde has been on the field more. He's seeing more overall touches. It's close. But I'm not. If Clyde has that touchdown over instead of Jonathan Taylor, Clyde's winning this thing 60-40, maybe even more.
Yeah. So we've got almost 100 votes already. What's your guess on the Joe Burrow versus Justin Herbert poll?
I'm guessing it's 2/3. I would say 65-35, 66-33.
59-41 for Burrow.
Okay.
So, and it just goes to show that there are, you know, 41% of people would prefer Justin Herbert on their team ahead of Joe Burrow. And it's like that instant gratification kind of thing. Like, I just don't see, I don't see an out for Joe Burrow anytime soon, you know?
Yeah. I feel bad.
I feel really bad for him.
Yeah. And you know what? I've been successful in my leagues because I take advantage of that type of stuff.
Yeah. And I get it. That makes sense. I'm just trying to take advantage in the near future. I'm trying to like do some profit really quickly instead of long-term profit. But yeah, that makes sense. If you lock in Joe Burrow, you're fine. But I just think at some point this season, Herbert will be worth more than Burrow, you know, just because that line, man, like how can you do that, you know, to a number one overall pick? I don't get it.
No, it's tough.
Poor guy. And I say poor guy and he's got, you know, millions and millions of dollars, but Poor guy relative to other quarterbacks in better situations, at least. So
yeah.
And that's it. I think that's a good spot to stop, right? You got anything? Any final thoughts?
No.
Play the odds, right?
Take advantage of this stuff. I mean, take advantage of it. Take advantage of the Darrell Henderson 2-touchdown game. Take advantage of Mike Williams 2-touchdown game. Take advantage of it. Because it matters.
There you go. It matters. That's all we got for you this week. Check us out again next week. Follow us on Twitter. The main handle is at FFDynastyTrades. Visit us online, www.dynastytradecalculator.com. Thank you for listening this week. We'll talk to you next week. Bye. Let's go.